everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service to the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. Stay tuned for tonight's special report on the age of AIDS when we come back. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there's no cause for alarm. But submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage. And the Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people. The Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press of political and social activities free from government surveillance. Now, you know, I wished I'd have thought of that, but that quotation comes from Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Now, our princes, our politicians, they beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, more gun control. But you and I haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years, and that's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts. Not from the political process. It doesn't come from politicians. It doesn't come from lawyers or bureaucrats. Old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair. Here's what he said. He said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, let me echo that by telling you that you give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either. Because the real power in America is in our courts, not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into this power of the courts, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. And best of all, it's free. Now, courtroom strategy and procedures available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send an email request for your free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about the age of AIDS, a report put out by Frontline on PBS. Let me give you their name and address, give you a little plug for them. They don't pay me, of course, for doing this, but I need to give them credit. Otherwise, somebody will send me a letter and say, "Well, you plagiarized that from Frontline." So I want to give them credit where credit's due. The address is www.pbs.org. So you click on, first of all, or you go to the PBS webpage. Then you go to WGBH, that's the television station in Boston, WGBH/pages/frontline. And the title of the story is The Age of AIDS. It's a 48-page report. Now, if you want to get a copy of the video, it's probably about $35, postage and the handling included. That's what they've always charged me in the past. The last segment of the program was a two-hour program. It's normally an hour and a half. And the second one was 2 hours. 48-page report on the age of AIDS. In 1996, they came up with what we call the cocktail. The AIDS cocktail was first unveiled. The 11th International AIDS Conference in Vancouver showcases the development and effectiveness of highly active antiretroviral therapy, which becomes known as the AIDS cocktail. The treatment developed by Dr. David Ho involves several highly toxic drugs administered several times a day and leads to dramatic improvement in AIDS patients. But the conference immediately raises questions about access to the expensive therapy, which costs $20,000 a year back in 1996 for the 90% of the HIV-infected people living in developing nations. William Dodge is patient number 9 in the study. Now, $20,000 a year, it's now down to $16,000. And in developing countries, they have it down to $275. That's $275 now. I've already commented on that. The price increase or the markup in drugs is out in the stars somewhere. I mean, they make a hell of a markup, a hell of a profit off these drugs. And of course, when you're faced with death and you have no other alternative, what do you care what $20,000 is? It's cheap. $20,000, no big deal. However, if you're living in a developing country like Rwanda or Uganda, and you're living on $1 a day or $2 a day, $20,000 a year, $16,000 a year, $1,000 a year is an impossible number for you to meet. So your solution is just die. And if you think that the drug companies are interested in life and preserving life, you know, that's what they advertise in their ads, you know. George Merck, he was just concerned about people and people suffering. Remember their ads, you know, the Merck people. I think you can take that with a grain of salt. Now, Dr. David Ho was named Man of the Year by Time magazine for his work in developing the AIDS cocktail back in 1996. Now, down in Brazil, their constitution guarantees access to the free health care that they offer, but the government refuses to make expensive antiretroviral drugs available to its estimated 500,000 citizens living with AIDS. A lady by the name of Nair Soares, her name was De Brito, a schoolteacher dying from AIDS, sues and a judge rules that she must get the drugs immediately. So the government passed a law guaranteeing universal free access to the drug cocktail in September, and distribution begins in October. And then the UN AIDS was launched. Dr. Peter Pio is asked to head the new agency, which is designed to coordinate all of the UN's AIDS efforts and to fill the vacuum left by the World Health Organization, now defunct, Global Program on AIDS. I felt that the top priority was exactly to put AIDS on the political agenda, P.O. tells Frontline. It has to be on the agenda of presidents, of prime ministers. If it's a national emergency, it's a matter of national survival. And while we're on the subject of national survival, in some countries like Botswana, in South Africa and Uganda, when they hire people for a job in a factory or something, they have to hire two. Because the guy they hire is going to get AIDS, and they got to have a replacement. Now think of that. 37% infection rate in Botswana, that's the highest in the world. 12% in South Africa. Yeah, it's a matter of national survival. In 1997, President Clinton announced a vaccine commitment, kind of like President Nixon back in 72. He said, we're going to have a war on cancer. And at a commencement speech at Morgan State University in Baltimore, President Clinton commits the United States to developing an AIDS vaccine by 2007. Well, that's next year. Next year, we're going to have an AIDS vaccine. That was President Clinton. Now, let me tell you where that's at. There's not going to be any AIDS vaccine. And that's because AIDS is a cash cow. Merck and Pfizer and these big drug companies selling these drug cocktails at $20,000 a year, you know, and you're going to live for 5, 6, 7 years now. Let's just try this out. You can live up to 8 years, 8 times 20. Is $160,000. They got it down to $16,000 now That's 128,000. Now, what does a vaccine cost? I mean, how much are they going to charge you for a vaccine? You're going to walk into the doctor's office and say, "Oh, doc, I need the new AIDS vaccine." And he says, "It's $160,000, which is the same price that we're going to make when you get AIDS and we sell you the AIDS cocktail. But we're going to save you all that time, effort, and energy and all that inconvenience of taking those pills three times a day. So we're going to sell you the vaccine for $160,000. Now, how do you think that's going to go over? Even if they got $150, they'd be out in the stratosphere for a vaccine. Now, do you think that Merck wants to develop a vaccine that they can sell to you for $150 when they can sell this AIDS program, the cocktail, for $160,000? No, I don't think so. Now, they may come up with something they call a vaccine, get everybody to take it like they do with the flu. You know, every year they got you taking this flu vaccine, which is as useless as one on a boar hog. I guess breasts on a boar hog. It isn't a viable solution to flu. Many people go out and get it. It just gives you Alzheimer's disease. That's all the bottom line to that is. It costs you $25, and then you get the flu anyway. Or you don't get the flu. If you don't get the flu, you give the vaccine the benefit. And if you do get the flu, you say, "Oh my God, imagine how much worse it would have been if I hadn't gotten the vaccine." And we call that science, for crying out loud. AIDS-related deaths decline dramatically now with this AIDS cocktail, largely due to the development of the highly active antiretroviral therapy, also known as the AIDS cocktail. AIDS-related deaths in the U.S. declined by more than 40%. The law encourages pharmacists to offer generics, establishes a national pricing committee to evaluate fair prices, and to enable the government to introduce compulsory licensing or the ability to manufacture drugs locally. And it allows parallel importation or the ability to purchase drugs from the country selling them at the lowest price. President Clinton, by the way, doesn't buy drugs here in the United States for his AIDS program. He gets them out of India. By early 1998, about 40 pharmaceutical companies have sued South Africa, and in February of that year, the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative, responding to industry pressure, places the country on a watch list. Now, listen to this. Here's South Africa. They've got this AIDS epidemic raging through the country, and they say, "Well, listen, we've got to have these antiretroviral drugs that you've got in the United States, but we can't afford to pay the $16,000 or $20,000 each." And so the pharmaceutical companies sue South Africa and the World Court to bar them from copying or patent infringing on their AIDS drugs. Now, here are these blacks in South Africa who can't afford it. You know, if you're rich, $20,000 doesn't mean anything. But if you're poor, it's the difference between life and death, isn't it? Well, now, the industry cares nothing for dying people. The industry, the pharmaceutical industry, cares about profit. And they care about profit. You know, even a predator, even a lion, has more compassion than a druggist. Half the world lives on $2 a day. $16,000 is 20 times more than half the people in the entire world even make, for crying out loud. They don't even make $16,000. Now, a lion kills an animal. A lion, a predator, kills something to eat. They don't kill people for profit. Pharmaceutical companies kill people for profit and think nothing about it, and will sue a government for infringing on their patent. And then, if you think the pharmaceutical industry is out here to save your life or do you some big favor, you know, I think you got another thing coming. In 1998, after the National Institute of Health declines to fund large-scale trials of Genentech's GP120 vaccine in June of 1994, Don Francis. This is Dr. Don Francis, who had left the CDC to run Genentech's AIDS vaccine testing program, raises the funds to spin off the AIDS vaccine division into a new company called VaxGen. The company privately raises the funds for Phase 3 trials. To date, the only Phase 3 trials of an AIDS vaccine, and it hopes the vaccine will protect 45% to 65% of the participants. Now, they're going to give you, when they develop a vaccine, I don't doubt but what they'll come up with something. They'll come up with a vaccine. Most people don't have AIDS to start with. So, just picture this. They come up with a vaccine. Maybe we could have distilled water. What do you know? And you pay the $150 and you get distilled water shot in your veins. It's called the AIDS vaccine, and you don't get AIDS. Notice they don't say, if we give you this vaccine, you're not going to get AIDS. What's the purpose for a vaccine? It's to prevent you from getting the disease. Well, boys and girls, the difference between 45 and 65% is roughly 50-50, which is about the same odds that you get on a crap table. So they don't have to have some kind of a vaccine. All they have to do is just sell you some kind of sugar water in a syringe, shoot you up with it. If you get AIDS, well, you weren't one of those that were protected. And if you don't get AIDS, see, it worked. And again, you know, we call this kind of crap science, for crying out loud. We call that science. If you bought a new car, and they said, now listen, pay us this premium, and we'll give you an extended warranty. And the car companies do that. You pay an extra premium, they give you an extended warranty. If the engine of your car hasn't blown up in the first 10,000 miles, it's not likely to blow up in the next 10,000 miles, and your car is covered by the initial warranty for 10,000 miles or 12,000 miles. God, they rake in tons of money by selling this extended warranty over here, you know. Oh, God, for only $100, I can get this extended warranty for 20,000 miles. And then once in a while, they pay off on it, maybe one in a thousand. So they sell you know, 1,000 policies for $20 each. That's $20,000. And one time, they have to rebuild an engine, costs them two. You know, those kinds of things are immensely profitable. When you see those kinds of come-ons like that, you ought to be able to figure out that the odds are that it isn't going to happen, or they wouldn't be selling it. Odds are. When an insurance company is selling you something and they put a premium on it, they're making about 90 cents profit. The worst insurance deal you can buy is auto insurance from the perspective of the auto insurance industry. That's because they have to pay out 11 cents for every premium dollar they take in. It's the worst insurance policy. All the rest of them make more profit than that. Same thing here with these vaccines, only this isn't something that's even intelligent, for crying out loud. You got to fit. We're going to develop a vaccine. We're going to shoot everybody up with it, and you got a 50-50 chance. If you get the disease, well, you were in that group that wasn't protected. And if you don't get the disease, yep, see, it worked. Hell, you can do that without the vaccine, saving $150. But I'll guarantee you, nobody's going to come up with an effective vaccine, because if you did, it'd kill the cash cow. We're not going to do that like we did with polio. And Clinton refused to fund the needle exchange. Now let's stop and think about this one for a moment. Secretary of Health and Human Services Donna Shalala prepares to announce a lift on the ban against federal funding for needle exchange programs. And she received a call telling her that President Clinton, at the urging of the drug czar, General Barry McCaffrey, won't rescind the ban. The decision is applauded by conservatives who don't want to send a message endorsing drug use, but is denounced by activists in the scientific community who argue that the overwhelming evidence shows the programs reduce the spread of HIV and don't encourage drug use. Excuse me, boys and girls. Have we got our heads up the wrong end here? Aren't these guys that are shooting up drugs, you know, these illegal drugs, aren't those criminals? Isn't that why we have this multi-billion-dollar a year war on drugs? And so these IV drug users are getting AIDS. And that costs us a lot of money. So we say, well, let's give them free needles. And the conservatives on the political spectrum say, oh my God, if we give them free needles, clean needles, they won't get AIDS, but it'll send a signal to everybody that we're in favor of drug use, so therefore we don't want to give them these free needles. So let them get AIDS. I don't think they're going to stop shooting up. On the other hand, if they get AIDS, well, then we're going to give them this antiretroviral AZT and this drug cocktail program over here. Well, excuse me, folks. Aren't we using drugs to control AIDS? Children, we're not opposed to drugs, are we? We're not opposed to drugs per se. We're opposed to certain types of drugs. We're opposed to heroin on the street corner. We're not opposed to AZT in a drug cocktail sold by Rexall or Osco Buttery now, are we? Now talk about a mixed message. The Bible has a pretty good message. It says, drugs equal witchcraft equals capital felony equals death. On the other hand, you have a thing in the Bible called medicine. Medicine's good for you. Medicine heals you. Medicine is something that you can use. Medicine is something that doesn't have side effects. Medicine is something that you can take with confidence, knowing that you're not going to overdose on it. Drugs, on the other hand, all have side effects. Drugs kill people, kill 130,000 people a year, and that's what they admit to. The illegal drugs come from, by and large, the illegal drugs come from plants. You know, like cocaine comes from a cocoa plant, and heroin comes from this poppy. Now they're a crime. They're witchcraft. They're a violation of the scripture because they've been boiled and synthesized down and strengthened. But the moral of the story is they only kill 6,000 people a year with heroin and cocaine. The druggists, the doctors, the medical profession kill 130,000 a year. And as I said, that's what they admit to. The numbers are really double, triple, or quadruple that. That's the real numbers. But what they admit to. How many times more is that? 130 divided by 6? They kill 21 times more people with these legal drugs authorized and sold by Merck and Pfizer and La Roche and all the rest of these guys. 21 times, nearly 22. Kill 20 times more people with legal drugs. Now, that's nonsense. We're not opposed to drugs in this country. In fact, the country is a nation of drug addicts, and we have just legalized drugs for the elderly. In fact, we're going to put the elderly on a taxpayer drug program, and people 65 years and older now are taking 6 drugs on average. If you're 65 years old and you're average, you're taking 6 drugs, and now those drugs are being paid for by the taxpayers. Well, that's every junkie's dream, isn't it? Your drug bill paid for by the taxpayer. I think all you drug addicts ought to get on the bandwagon and say, well, wait a minute, if the old folks are entitled to drugs, aren't heroin addicts entitled to drugs? We should have national legislation, you know, our government should come up there, in order to get, you know, the heroin users' vote, don't you think? Well, there's no doubt about it in the scripture. Drugs are against the law. Drugs are something that are bad for you. The government, when they tell you that heroin's bad for you, they're not lying to you. They're telling you the truth. When they come to you and tell you that AZT is good for you, that's a lie. It's not. But then, when people are desperate, and I mentioned this to you earlier, I said, you know, most of you people out there that have AIDS, cancer, so you don't have a medical problem. You've got a legal problem. Bubonic plague, boys and girls, isn't a medical problem. It's a legal problem. And that's because in Exodus 15:26, Deuteronomy 7:15, and Deuteronomy 28:60, God tells you three times in the scripture now. Three times. so that you wouldn't think that he was stuttering. It's like old George Bush saying, hey, watch my lips. Disease is the results of sin. Disease is the natural consequence. It's the punishment that you receive, dealt out by God Himself for the violation of a law. AIDS isn't something that you get accidentally. AIDS is something that you get because you broke a law to get it. If you get sick, you have to break a law. It is true that there are medicines versus drugs. And in the Bible, you'll see the word medicine and medicines used four times. And honey is a medicine. Lamb's quarter is a medicine. Poke is a medicine. Arnica is a medicine. Medicine is something that you use to ameliorate a medical problem. Drugs are something that you use to evade the penalty of a broken law. And that's exactly what the sodomites are after here. See, they go to Congress, and they got a group called ACT UP. They go to Congress, or they stage a demonstration, and they're kind of like the old folks. You know, they want government to come in with taxpayer-supported funding to find a cure for AIDS. They don't want to change their behavior. The purpose for disease is to cause you to hear and fear and change your behavior. The reason, you know, when I was a kid, you know, they used to send us through public school, and they used to have a little education program there on venereal disease. And they'd show you pictures of people whose noses had rotted off, or people who were dying from venereal disease. And they said, now you see, this is what happens when you get venereal disease, and you got to watch out for venereal disease, and venereal disease is caused by the violation of the law that says thou shalt not commit adultery. And this is before we got the Bible and Ten Commandments thrown out of our public schools. Today, they teach sex education in the public schools. They teach you to practice this illicit sex. As a result of that, 25%, that's a quarter now, of all the teenagers in the country, 25% of the teenagers now, young people, have sexually transmitted diseases. Cause and effect. Then they come along and say, okay, but that's no big deal. If you got a sexually transmitted disease, we'll give you penicillin, dihydrostreptomycin, or some kind of a disease-fighting drug over here to cure you so that you can continue with this kind of illicit behavior. You're not taught and trained. Nobody informs you that you ought not to participate in that kind of behavior. In fact, they encourage sodomy. It's called an alternative lifestyle. Alternative lifestyle is the term that they use for that. And then when you get AIDS, boy, now that's another story. And remember now, children, AIDS is a fatal disease. Fatal. It's going to kill you. In the United States, it's going to take you 8 years to die from it. In Africa, it just takes 1 to 2 years. So, you know, choice is yours. You can spend $16,000 a year for the next 8 years and die, or you can spend nothing and die in 1 to 2 years. But you're going to die, and you're going to die from the AIDS. Now, I say that's a pretty heavy penalty to pay for a little fun on Friday night, don't you? So Clinton refused this needle exchange thing. This is back in 98 now. And they did it for political reasons. I mean, they're not interested in saving anybody's life. They're interested in votes and getting reelected to office. Now, you know, if you're gonna go out here and solve the AIDS problem, well, then it doesn't make any difference whether you're a needle user or you're a drug user or what. You know, the objective here is that we're going to save everybody. Down in Brazil, they've got a national policy for saving everybody. And so they give these antiretroviral drugs to prostitutes, drug users. They got needle change exchange programs, so you have clean needles to shoot up with heroin. And their objective down in Brazil is to save everybody from AIDS. They've got a consistent policy, not here in the United States. And our policy affects people worldwide. You know, when President Bush offered that $15 billion, you know, over 4 or 5 years for AIDS, to combat AIDS, there are strings attached to that. Strings attached that fit in with conservative religious philosophies. Whereas in Brazil, they don't attach religion to it at all. They just give everybody what they need, you know, in order, all the drugs that they need to solve the AIDS problem. Let me give you a reminder here. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. And The Law Hour is heard around the world over the internet daily. If you'd like more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. And the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications used on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give out do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications that we use here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Hemophiliacs. Back in 1998, Congress authorized the Hemophilia Fund, the Ricky Ray Hemophilia Relief Fund Act, named for one of the three HIV-positive brothers whose Arcadia, Florida home was burned down by arsonists in 1987, authorizes payments to hemophiliacs who contracted HIV from the blood supply between 1982 and 1987. The fund, which closes out in October 2005, pays out more than $559 million to 7,171 eligible individuals and survivors. Hemophilia, remember now, is a genetic blood disorder. People's blood doesn't, it won't clot. And they bleed to death. It's a minor affliction, when you're looking at numbers. Major when you've got it. If you're a bleeder or a hemophiliac, you have a medical problem. medical problem. And in this case, the medical problem doesn't have anything to do with any crime or any sin, any lawlessness that you have committed. It is the results, however, of a violation of law by somebody else. And this is something you ought to be thinking about. We're here in Exodus chapter 20, about verse 3 or 4. Where it says, you shall not make unto you any graven image or any likeness of anything that's in the heavens above or that's in the earth beneath or that's in the water under the earth. Nor shall you bow down yourself to them nor serve them, because I'm the eternal your God, I'm a jealous God. And here's the kicker. Visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. Third and fourth generation oftentimes are paying the penalties of the criminal behavior or the criminal acts. This happens with AIDS. You know, you go out and you get a dose of AIDS and then you pass the AIDS on to your offspring when they're born or through breast milk when you're feeding them. So here are little babies now who are totally innocent. They're not guilty. They didn't go out and practice sodomy or go break some law. They though, come under the curse or the penalty of the law because of the sins of their parents. So when these people die, you know, of course, and the religious guys, they come in here and you got to ask them the question, well, when these babies die, what happens to them? And the religious guy says, well, they got to always come up with an answer for this, because after all, they haven't been baptized, haven't been born again. And I'm talking about these millions and millions of people that have never heard the name of Jesus, the only name under heaven whereby men may be saved. Remember that? Little Chinese babies, you know, that are born with AIDS and don't have any saving grace upon them. We've got to come up with a solution for that, don't they? The answer is they're going into a hole in the ground. They're gonna die and rot away, and they'll come up in the second resurrection. Three resurrections mentioned in the Bible. You can read about all three of them in Revelation chapter 20. Three resurrections. Religious people don't get resurrected. They go to heaven. And the Bible doesn't send anybody to heaven. They send them into a resurrection. One of three resurrections. Of which the first is called the better resurrection. But anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in there for a little mix, because these people are paying a penalty for somebody else's crime. That happens once in a while. People get murdered. The victim of the murder is not the murderer. He's not a criminal. He's the victim of the murder. The murderer is the criminal. Now, you ought to be thinking about that, because oftentimes the actions that you take today may affect somebody else down the line. That's why I mentioned the other day to you, if I had AIDS, I would be wearing a face mask. And when you came into the room, I would say to you, stand on the other side of the room, put on one of those face masks yourself, because I have AIDS. And you'd say, oh, that's all right, Mr. Gordon, it's not casually transmissible. I'd say, excuse me, partner, but the scripture says that I'm unclean, and that because I'm unclean, I need to protect you through quarantine. So I'm telling you plainly, you know, stay away from me. You do not want my disease. Now, that's an incumbent requirement that's incumbent upon all of us that have diseases called quarantine. Now, if you practice these laws, you know, there's going to be an effect. There's going to be a benefit. And down in Cuba, they receive that benefit by practicing quarantine. They have the lowest incidence of AIDS. Doesn't mean it's not existent there. There are criminals down there in Cuba. But the Cuban government follows the biblical principles of quarantine as opposed to the druggists' principles, and boy, are they getting castigated for it. I mean, the UN's against them. Every government in the world now is pointing their fingers at the Cubans down there and calling them bad names for following the scripture. I don't know why they're following the scripture. A little communist country down here in the Caribbean. But for some reason, they are. Now, the price for AZT responding to pressure from activists in the international community, this is in 1998, GlaxoSmithKline Welcome announces that it will cut the price of AZT, which helps prevent mother-to-child transmissions, by as much as 75% for the developing world. And at the time, about 1,500 HIV-infected babies are born every day. But even with the discount, the prices are still exorbitantly high and out of reach for the world's poorest countries. So even though they cut the price of AZT by 75%, it's still exorbitantly high. Notice this, 1,500 HIV-infected babies are born every day. This is worldwide. 1,500. That's what I just mentioned to you. I said, you know, ladies, when you get AIDS and then you get pregnant, you're going to pass that AIDS off onto your child. Well, now modern medicine comes along and says, but we've got AZT. We have, how'd they word that there? We have an exorbitantly high-priced drug, exorbitantly high-priced drug, that will prevent that. Hey, there's another way to prevent that. Don't get AIDS. And the only way you can get AIDS is if you violate one of these scriptural laws. You've got to break a law to get AIDS. Now, there's some exceptions to that. These 1,500 babies are an exception to that rule. You could get it, you know, by some other means. But if you were practicing biblical law, you'd be very cautious and very careful. You know, I'm very cautious and very careful about where I eat, what I do, people that I have contact with, health and hygiene. You know, health and hygiene are a couple of items that are at the top of God's priorities over here. Health and hygiene, very important to the prevention of disease. Quarantine, very important to the prevention of disease. Now, here's some new data about HIV's origins. Researcher Beatrice Hahn of the University of Alabama at Birmingham presents new data suggesting that HIV-1 originated in a subspecies of chimpanzees found in West Africa, examining four of these chimps who were infected with simian immunodeficiency virus, or SIV. Hahn finds that three were infected with a strain of HIV whose genetic material closely resembles HIV-1. Now, in Genesis chapter 3, we learn that the creation was complete on the sixth day of creation. So, whatever viruses were created then. And they've been here all the time, whether we knew about them or not. We also have found out that disease, such as AIDS, is a penalty that we pay for the violation of a law, that these diseases are for the purposes of behavioral modification, and that disease is a penalty that comes directly from God. It's not an accident that you got sick. You had to break a law to get sick. All right, now we're finding out that there are drugs and there are medicines. The authorized use of medicines are scriptural, and the use of drugs is witchcraft, and it's prohibited. So I guess we should take a look at the difference between drugs and medicines. Drugs and medicines. I guess at the same time, we probably ought to take a look at disease and decide, well, which diseases are the results of a punishment, and which diseases are the results of or are a medical problem? Because one is a legal problem, the other is a medical problem. Hemophiliacs have a medical problem. AIDS victims have a legal problem. And the difference between the two is that AIDS is the punishment that comes from God for a prohibited activity. That's a punishment. That's a legal problem. And what medical science, what modern medicine is attempting to do is to apply a medical solution to a legal problem. And it does have some effect. You know, I'm not denying that it has effect. You can take somebody who's breaking a law, sodomy, and they develop AIDS. And because of the AIDS, they now need a medical solution. And so the medical community, for profit and gain, comes up with a $16,000 AIDS cocktail, which will keep them alive for another 6 or 8 years. That's a medical solution to a legal problem. And it has an effect. Gives you 6 or 8 more years of life. Costs you a little money. And if you've got the money, it's no big deal. If you don't have the money, it's a death sentence. All right, now a medical problem, a little bit different side to the story over here. Let's suppose that you're lacking in vitamin C, develop scurvy. Well, the solution to scurvy is vitamin C. Vitamin C is an herb. An herb is a medicine. So we give you tomato juice or orange juice, or we give you vitamin C, and the vitamin C then cures the scurvy. So you can cure disease. Disease, ill at ease, I feel bad. Okay, AIDS is a disease, makes you feel real bad. And scurvy is a disease. Now, you know, people die from scurvy. You know, the old British sailors, you know, they'd have a scurvied ship. That's why they got to calling them limeys. You know, they put limes on the ships, and they had their sailors eating these limes every day. Citrus, getting vitamin C, they didn't get scurvy. And they had these long voyages, you know, and these people were vitamin C deficient. Now, you can get vitamin C by sprouting seeds. You can just take seeds and sprout them and get your vitamin C. In fact, you ought to have a seed program and so that you got an emergency supply of seeds so that you can sprout the seeds, eat the sprouts, and then solve your vitamin C problem. So there's a natural solution. And in the Bible, the word medicine is used several times. Let me give you a couple of examples. Medicine is a food, and you can't overdose on it, as a general rule. I mean, wine is a medicine, and wine is something you can overdose on, and you're cautioned against that. And there's a number of scriptures that tell you, no, don't be a wine bibber and watch out for wine, but in 1 Timothy 5, verse 23, Paul advised Timothy to take a little wine for his stomach's sake. The French people and Italian people, Mediterranean people, drink a lot of wine, and they have a very low incidence of cardiovascular disease. Scientists looking at this have discovered in tests that people that drink wine in moderation have less cardiovascular distress than people who do not drink wine. So you Mormons ought to learn a lesson from that. You won't, but I say you ought to. See, people that are motivated by religion can't learn. Now, scientists can learn. Now, you people out there that are involved in science, if you can divorce religion from the Bible, and that's because the Bible's not a religious book, it's a scientific book. It's a history book. It's a law book. It has literally nothing to do with religion. The religious people have picked up the Bible and kind of adopted it and claimed it as their own, and then they apply their religious doctrines and claim that those religious doctrines come out of the Bible, which they do not. This, of course, turns everybody off because we look at the antics of these religious people and we say, my God, that's insane. And it is. And my God, they get it out of the Bible. Therefore, the Bible must be insane, which it isn't. And they didn't get these antics out of the Bible. They just claimed that they did. This, of course, turns everybody off on the Bible, which is a very scientific book. I'm going to show you that. Now, medicine is something that's good for you. Honey is a medicine. In fact, and the Roman army, and the famous Roman legions, when they went out to battle, carried two things with them, honey and wine, to treat the wounds and injuries of their soldiers. So when a soldier was cut up and he was injured, they would pour wine and oil, or wine and honey, into that wound. Now, wine contains alcohol. And what do doctors do today in order to sterilize needles or to sterilize a wound? They use alcohol, don't they? Now, they don't use honey, but honey is filled with sugar, and bacteria cannot live in sugar. That's why honey keeps forever. Bacteria can't get into it. You don't see mold growing on honey. You don't have to refrigerate honey. It's got so much sugar in it that disease pathogens can't live in it. So the old-timey guys, they figured out, well, what if you poured this honey into this wound? It's a sterilizing agent. And so the honey, and you'll notice that there was a story, remember, of the Good Samaritan. You'll see that over here in Luke 10, verse 34. This Good Samaritan walking down the road, and this guy's been beaten up by robbers, and he's injured. He's got cuts and bruises all over him. And so they pour in wine and oil. Why would anybody pour wine and oil into a wound? To disinfect it, to prevent infection. But listen, honey, wine, and oil have very little commercial value, whereas penicillin, dihydrostreptomycin, terramycin, and drugs have a lot of commercial value. And so, of course, we in the Western world have adopted scientific medicine. And then we use this scientific medicine, this process, and apply that to legal problems like AIDS and cancer. Cancer is a disease. It's a curse. It's a plague. And it's a curse and a plague that's sent by God to punish us, to change our behavior. And diabetes now is a medical problem. Diabetes is a medical problem. Cancer is a legal problem. AIDS is a legal problem. Scurvy is a medical problem. You know, if we could divide out the medical and the legal problems, you know, we could solve this disease things practically overnight. And as an individual, you can solve your disease problem overnight. I don't have any health insurance. I don't need it. What would I want health insurance for? Now, if you're going to break the law, you need health insurance. I don't deny it. And that's because every law has a penalty. There's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. If you could have a broken law, if you could practice sodomy, then there could not be any law against it. If there was sodomy without a penalty, then there wouldn't be a problem. Where there's no sin, there's no transgression. Where there's no transgression, there's no sin. Sin is the transgression of the law. Sin is a violation of a law. Now, we go to public school, we go to college, we go to university, we get degrees and letters after our names. Nobody ever explains to us from the owner's manual perspective. Here's God, the designer and the creator. The first thing you learn in college is that there is no designer, there's no creator, you evolve from green slime. That's the first error. So, give me the benefit of the doubt. Let's suppose, just for the sake of our discussion here, that there is, in fact, a creator. That you didn't evolve, that you were designed and created. Well, then, would it make sense, then, that the creator would send along an owner's handbook, kind of like the Ford Motor Company does? They want to sell you a car. They send along an owner's handbook to tell you how to take care of it. Does that make sense? Well, it makes sense when you buy an automobile, doesn't it? Doesn't it make the same amount of sense from the perspective of your body? We tell you in the owner's manual what kind of fuel to put into this Ford automobile. Did you think that God would be remiss and then not tell you what kind of fuel or what kind of fuel to avoid putting into your body? Now, I remember my old uncle, Gene Titus, telling me a story one time. And he said, during the Depression years, you know, stove oil, this is the stuff you used to buy to heat your house with in California, stove oil. Well, you use it up in New England, you know, you people up there. You call it diesel or you call it fuel oil or stove oil. Well, it was 9 cents a gallon. Gasoline was 17 cents a gallon. This was 1935. So they used to run John Deere tractors on dieseline, kerosene, stove oil. But you had to start it first on gasoline and then get it running, get it up to 180 to 200 degrees temperature, and then it would run on diesel. Spark plugs, wiring, same thing as your car. So I got to thinking, well, could we run our old cars on diesel or stove oil? And the answer is yes, you can. Now, it's not the best fuel. You know, pig is not the best fuel for your body, but your body will run on pig, as evidenced by the fact that people eat pig. And you know, you can use all kinds of fuels, you know, in your automobile. It won't run as well. It won't run as long. It doesn't give you the same kind of performance, but you can run it. And your body will run on pig, and it'll run on alligator, it'll run on a whole host and plethora. It'll run on sugar, refined sugar, it'll run on Oreo cookies, Coca-Cola, PepsiCo. Then, as time progresses along, you develop diabetes. You know, it doesn't run as well. And pretty soon it quits running. We call that death. Well, God hasn't left you out here in the cold, boys and girls. He's given you a manual over here. The problem is that the religious people hijacked the owner's manual. And then they've applied a lot of religious hocus-pocus. You know, they turn around three times, shake bat's knuckles under the full moon, and call that religion. See, and of course, anybody with a half a brain looks at that and says, my God, I can't buy into that kind of nonsense. And so they throw out the baby with the bathwater. They throw out the good with the bad. See? So if you can divorce religion from the Bible and just look at it as a science book over here, as an owner's manual with your body, your creator, your designer, the master engineer hasn't left you deaf, dumb, and blind. And in fact, every time you take a look at modern medical science and you experiment, you find out that pouring wine into a wound causes no harm and disinfects the wound. Now, you can buy your alcohol, you know, from Osco Buttery or from Rexall, or you can buy it down at the local liquor store. It doesn't really make a lot of difference. Alcohol is alcohol. But there's a natural form of alcohol, and, you know, you could just take a bottle of wine. You don't need alcohol very often. We have a wine cellar here, and whenever we have a cut, a bruise, or something that, you know, needs disinfecting, you know, we pour a little wine on it. That's how simple that is. Saves you a little money. Next time we'll take this up with a little more pizzazz, and I'll show you some of the scriptures right from the Bible, and we'll divide out, and I'll show you that some of these diseases are a legal problem over here, and you need a legal solution. You gotta apply some law to it. Sometimes people ask me, how come you're talking religion, you know, on your program? Well, we don't talk religion here on the program. We talk law and science. And the Bible is filled with law and science. It's the owner's manual. It tells you the answer to the riddle. You know, if you want to avoid AIDS, there's a common sense solution. I don't have AIDS, and I'm avoiding AIDS like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Hey, I got to give you a friendly reminder here. We're about to the end of the program. Let me remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information about that, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, good night, friends.